This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 6th of March 2020. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 6th of March, which this week have been edited by Sonia Phillips, Jane Pickard, Sheila Shepherd and Sheila Shepard. And your readers today are Heather Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Roy Faithful. Now the main headlines this week are Coronavirus Alert at Primary School, City set to be top economy, and anger over car park plans. Let's have the story behind the first headline, please, Heather.
Coronavirus alert at primary school. And there's a picture of Oliver's Battery Primary School. Two Winchester school pupils are now in quarantine amid coronavirus fears after they travelled in a taxi that had been used by a person with a confirmed diagnosis of the virus. The children from Oliver's Battery Primary School were put in isolation on Tuesday and are expected to remain there for 14 days as a precautionary measure. It comes as a person from Hampshire has become the first from the county to contract the COVID-19 virus, which has killed more than 3,000 people worldwide. It is unclear whether the unnamed person is linked with the pupils in self-isolation from the primary school. In a letter to parents, headteacher Carly Redfern said, "We've been informed this morning that two of our pupils have been in a taxi which had previously had a passenger that is now a confirmed case of coronavirus. As the pupils have not had direct contact, they are at very low risk of contracting the virus. However, as a precautionary measure, the children have been sent home and we be in quarantine there for the advised 14 days. Mrs. Redfern stated that there is a very low risk to the rest of the school community. Following the announcement, the attendance was said to be less than usual at the Austin Avenue School, according to one parent speaking to the Chronicle. The parent, who wished to remain anonymous, said, "There are less cars around, there are more kids and parents around on every other day, usually much busier, this is less than usual." But they added that they were not worried about the coronavirus and believed it had been hyped up. "There's not a lot we can do," she said. "If they get it, they get it. Kids are strong and they have good immune systems. They'll be able to fight it out. One of my friends went home yesterday and washed absolutely everything. I think the whole thing has been hyped up out of proportion. If I was worried, the kids wouldn't be coming in." Another parent, who also asked not to be identified, said they think the school are taking the right precautions. "It's not a directly confirmed case, so I'm not too fussed about it at the moment. The school are being very sensible," he said.
Okay, Noel, let's have the second headline story, please.
Yes, this is quite complicated. City is set to be top economy. And Winchester is set for faster economic growth than Hampshire's other cities over the coming years, a report suggests. The city has seen above average growth of 2.9% in the past 3 years, with expansion of 2.3% expected from 2016 to 2019, according to the regional economic forecast produced by professional services from EY. Southampton, which saw growth in gross value added, that's GVA, gross value added, of 0.7% from 2016 to 19, is expected to grow by 1.4% from 2020 to 23, the report says. In Portsmouth, which saw 1.3% growth from 2016 to 19, the figure is set to be 1.7%. Across the whole South Coast, according to the report, growth was 0.8% from 2016 to 19 and is predicted to reach 1.5% from 2020 to 23, which is below average for the largest cities in England, but in line with predicted growth for towns. Dave Hales, office managing partner in EY in Southampton, said, "Throughout the report, there is a strong consensus that regional disparities need to be addressed. However, the figures for the South Coast show that there are some very strong areas where above-average GVA growth has been achieved and is predicted. Some of our largest cities, notably Southampton and Portsmouth, are predicted to see lower levels of GVA growth over the next 3 years. This reflects that beyond a north-south disparity, there is a macroeconomic disparity in our region. If we are to achieve consistent and widespread growth, our regional policymakers and businesses need to address this situation. The South Coast is a major global trade gateway. Post-Brexit, we have an opportunity to focus our attention on the creation of more free ports, helping to boost investment in port areas and regenerating coastal communities." He said the idea of free ports, areas where goods can be imported without duties if they are exported again straight away, could support work to level up the economy in England. The government recently chose Southampton to launch a 10-week consultation on the idea. Last autumn, another report by Erwin Mitchell and the Centre for Economic Business Research predicted Southampton's economy would grow by 18.5% over the next decade and Portsmouth's by 16.7%. The EY report suggests job growth will be weak because of the likelihood of friction in customs arrangements when Brexit takes full effect next year. Employment is expected to grow on average by 0.7% in Winchester, 1.1% a year in Southampton, and 0.9% in Portsmouth. Debbie O'Hanlon, EY Managing Partner for UK Region, said the geographic imbalances in the UK are long-standing and it's clear that there is no silver bullet or easy solution. This will take concerted and integrated policy thinking by government, as well as business, academia and other stakeholders.
Let's have the third headline story, please, Jane.
Which is anger over car park plans. Emotions ran high as villagers accused parish councillors of choosing the nuclear option in a bid to build a new car park at the train station in Shawford. For a decade, Compton and Shawford Parish Council has been exploring solutions for the problem of parking by commuters using the station, and on Tuesday night, residents packed into the parish hall to air their views. Residents are arguing that they were left out of the discussions, which saw plans change without any formal consultation. Previously, the authority was in talks with Hampshire County Council and South Western Railway about the possibility of using land owned by Walcon Marine, who leased the land to a storage company. But in January, this was pulled off the table, and instead, a patch of green space known locally as the Triangle on Shawford Down was proposed. If plans are moved forward, it could mean that part of the local nature reserve would be turned into a 100-space car park, which Councillor Martin Bell, the member fronting the project on the council, said had been discussed. This was argued by Catherine Brandt, chair of the Residents Association, who said that despite an agreement to work together, the association was not told about the new plans until they were announced at the parish council meeting. She said, "I can't respond on behalf of the residents about a completely new proposal that I only heard about 30 seconds before." But Councillor Bell said, "The parish council considered it to be a consultation. It was a consultation." He also stated that there is a time frame for funding. Resident and former Hampshire County Council lawyer, who wished not to be named, argued that the County Council could use its powers of compulsory purchase to buy part of the Walcon site. And nearby resident Emma Russell said, "We feel that we are being excluded from the conversations that are taking place. We are the ones that live here, and we are the ones that are going to be impacted by it. We do not want car parking issues resolved. We do want car parking issues resolved, but it does need to be somebody that is suitable for everybody." And Nick Wells, who lives close to the proposed site, said, "It is not necessarily the lack of consultation. It is the fact that it is being perceived that parish councillors are going for the nuclear option. We just want discussions to be had on real facts. The community has also expressed concern about the impact it will have on the environment, with the car park expected to be lit in the evening, along with health and safety of residents. Council Chairman Mike Goulding proposed that another meeting should be had with representatives from the community to discuss their concerns and put them to HCC and SWR to see if a way forward can be found. This was backed by all the councillors except Councillor Bell. And speaking after the meeting, Mrs Brandt said, "I think we are happy that they have agreed to a public consultation. It was clear that one councillor appeared not to understand the meaning of consultation."
And that concludes the headline stories. We're going to continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, historical items, letter from Westminster, first person, editorial comment, question and answer my Winchester, and Bulgarum diary. And we'll end with items of general news. I'll start with the death notices. Beasley, Dr. Reginald Beasley, aged 92. Bell, Robert Clinton Bob Bell, peacefully. Crudgington, Mary Louisa Crudgington, peacefully at St. Cross Grange Care Home, aged 96. Dunn, John Norman Dunn, peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 89. Harrison, John Joseph Henry Harrison, MBE, Lieutenant Commander Royal Navy, retired, peacefully at home, aged 90. Heap, David Thompson Heap, Lieutenant Commander, Royal Navy, retired, peacefully after a short illness at Eastfield Nursing Home, Liss, aged 93. Moore, Michael Jaffray Moore, peacefully at the Countess of Brecknock Hospice, aged 52. Merritt, Janice Dawn Natong Merritt, peacefully at home, aged 66. And finally, Nelms, Susan Mary Nabeel Nelms, aged 83, and there will be an obituary for Mrs. Nelms later on. We're going to continue with the Christian comment read by Jane.
And Christian comment this week comes from Mark Collinson and is on the danger of death. My wife and I have just had an amazing visit to Australia to visit her side of the family. Never having been there before, it was a new experience to be in an English-speaking culture on the other side of the world. One of the things that struck us was the danger of death. Little signs showing pictures of people falling off cliffs if they're not careful. Road signs warned us, "Don't die, take a 15-minute power nap." The Victoria State car number plate said, "Stay alert, stay alive." The Urban Train Company ran a campaign using a song called "Dumb Ways to Die" to warn people not to cross the tracks. One of our friends explained what to do if you're bitten by a snake. Death and peril lies around every corner. Sadly, whilst we were there, the coronavirus spread from China to various other countries in Southeast Asia, and now we have been warned that it is highly likely it will spread across much of the UK. Fortunately, only a very small percentage of people who get the virus die. But because so many people are likely to catch it, the danger of death for many lies just around the corner. In our culture, we aren't used to the imminence of death. Bad things, we think, such as an early death, generally happen to someone else. We hear of other people suffering in such ways, but it's hard to think it could be me. Last Saturday, the Baptist Church ran a coffee morning for their volunteers called Grave Talk. It's an opportunity to talk about what we'd all rather not talk about. It's a time when you can ask questions about death and what happens when we die. Who do you contact? What is probate? What sort of funeral would you like? You can also ask spiritual questions and talk about grief. The Apostle Paul helps Christians today to live alongside our death. Christians anticipate their future death by connecting it with the death of Jesus Christ on the cross. Paul says, "I have been crucified with Christ. It's as if he has already died and is already living a new kind of life in the power of the resurrected Christ. This somehow changes his outlook and takes away a lot of the fear around death. The next few weeks and months might be really difficult for us as a nation and globally. We might hear of people who die from the coronavirus. It might be hard to face the fact that death is just around the corner. Jesus, willingly but not joyously, went to his death on the cross to forge a way through the valley of the shadow of death for the rest of us. Let's call upon him, not only to comfort us in our grief, but to help us face the only certainty in life, apart from taxes. And that was from Mark Collinson, Canon Principal, Winchester Cathedral.
We'll continue with letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. The email address is news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or the written address is the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, S0238AL. Now, there are 10 letters this week. We'll begin with one read by Heather.
Karen Barrett writes about the impact of Heathrow. Sir, assuming the Heathrow third runway court ruling is not overturned, it surely represents a legal precedent with implications for major developments in general by establishing the principle that environmental concerns must be fundamental in granting planning permission rather than just add-ons in the form of conditions. As things currently stand, it is far too easy for developers to apply for amendments to such conditions after getting planning permission, citing viability constraints while using commercial confidentiality to avoid a rigorous scrutiny. This imbalance in the planning system too often places planning authorities in a difficult position when time and money have already been spent on the preliminary stages of a development. There is little point, however, in councils repeatedly stating their commitment to reducing carbon footprint when they don't have the power, even if they have the will, to implement changes that will actually deliver. Nationally and locally, we see a great deal of lip service in support of climate change activists by politicians desperate to be on the right side of history. But actions speak louder than words. Local bids, BIDs, often have more influence in shaping the future of communities than environmental groups, and the local bids, of course, support businesses. This is symptomatic of a national mindset that promotes economic growth at all costs, whether green or not, and where environmental considerations, which should underpin all decision-making, are only talked about in terms of offsetting and mitigation measures. I attended my great-grandson's second birthday at the weekend, a happy occasion. But I wonder what sort of world he will inherit if governments continue to fail to recognise that business as usual is no longer an option. Karen Barrett, Byron Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
And Sheena Smith writes about money wasted on smart motorways. Sir, letters to this page last week highlighted the urgent need for repair to our roads. Is it possible that some of the money which should be invested in repairing our existing roads is being spent instead on the construction of smart motorways? Despite all the evidence which confirms that they are not smart at all, or safe to drive on, as highlighted by a recent Panorama programme, Britain's Killer Motorways, it seems scandalous that work on smart motorways has not been halted, knowing what we know now about the real danger of doing away with hard shoulders of existing motorways. Shouldn't the government be taking this issue much more seriously? Or is this going to be yet another situation where too many people have to die needlessly before proper attention is paid? Sheena Smith, Northbrook Avenue, Winchester.
And this letter from Robin and Gaynor Warman is headed Superb Show. Sir, last week, Winchester Musicals and Opera Society, as part of their three-night tour of local venues, came to Colden Common Community Centre with their production of The Sound of Musicals. What an evening it was, with sheer professionalism and musical talent of the highest order. They performed a wide variety of songs, from well-loved musicals to a packed Gloucester Hall. It was such a delight to listen to singers, both solo and ensemble, in a venue that provided them with a large stage and full backstage facilities to help showcase their talents. Thank you so much, WMOS. You will always be welcome to entertain us again in Coldham Common. And that was from Robin and Gaynor Warman, Piping Green, Coldham Common.
Bob Bland writes about Cash Wasted. Wow, a really well-produced, full-colour information update as to what is planned for the Winchester District dropped through my letterbox last week. But at what cost? The publication, sent to every home in the district via the Royal Mail, must have cost in excess of £50,000. The information provided can be read in every local newspaper. Why the need to waste so much money on a publication that was destined to the bin as soon as it was posted through the door? Cut this. Cut that we are a caring, conscientious council looking to make Winchester a forerunner to cleaning up the environment. Sorry, with expected shortfalls in spending, the cost of clearing up fly tipping, the monthly bottle collection service, etc., etc., does not bode well. Look at the communal bins. There are dozens of bottles. Around the uncared-for alleys running between the main roads are mounds of rubbish and garden waste. Come on, city councillors. You've been elected to serve your constituents, not waste much-needed funding on daft information publications. Let people know where they can find the details via a one-off information card or on bulletin notice boards. It's not rocket science. Bob Bland, Upton Grey Close, Hairstock, Winchester.
And Alan Cobbold writes, Pancake Thanks. Sir, I'm writing to fill in the results of the generosity of Winchester following your excellent reportage on and support for the second annual Winchester Pancake Race 2020, organised by Winchester Rotary Club in partnership with Winchester Cathedral. This year, the event was held to fund a visit to Potter's World for 28 of the Winchester and District Young Carers. This letter is to let your readers know that the event and the day was a great success. 38 teams from all sectors and organisations of Winchester came together to raise £1,500. This was an amazing achievement, for which we would like to thank not only the teams who dressed up and competed, but all the residents of Winchester who turned out on a very wintry Shrove Tuesday. We hope they all had a good time. Your readers may also like to know that the next charity event their Rotary Club is holding is the Searchlight Concert, with performances of big band classics by the amazing Spitfire Sisters. Details can be found on our home website, www.winchester-rotary.org. I'll say that again, www.winchester-rotary.org. And that's all in lowercase letters. Thank you, one and all, and see you next year on Shrove Tuesday, February the 16th, 2021. Alan Cobbold, Winchester Rotary Club Events, Eversley Gardens, Kingsworthy.
And this letter is from Michael Carden, who is the Vice Chairman of the City of Winchester Trust and headed Eccentric. Sir, we admired Ian Tate as a hard-working and outspoken city councillor, but with at times a somewhat eccentric grasp of reality, as he illustrates in his letter on February the 27th in the Chronicle. We do not expect our members to agree with all the Trust's opinions, but our views on the station approach development have never been inconsistent. Amongst other things, we always opposed its departure from the official brief that the development should relate sympathetically to the scale and character of the surroundings. Moreover, it is significant that our principal concern about scale was shared by both the local and regional design review panels, Historic England and the South Downs National Park Authority. As to our ineffectiveness, can this be so when our solicitor said he had never seen such a good case for judicial review, which WCC accepted without argument? Finally, we have not been taken over by Councillor Gottlieb. It is true that he is another member, but he has no role in the management of the Trust. In passing, readers might like to know that the Williams and Glynn's Bank, subsequently RBS, received an award from the Civic Trust before we introduced our award scheme, and that the Casson Block was also highly praised at the time. And that was from Michael Carden, Vice Chairman, City of Winchester Trust, Christchurch Road, Winchester.
I've got another grumpy political one. Martin Halfpenny writes, big mistake. When Winchester's voters threw out the Conservative City Council administration for the Liberal Democrats last May, in a futile protest against Brexit, they made a mistake. The Tories were not perfect, particular over their initial plans for Silver Hill, but they ran good services, did not put up taxes and charges, and importantly, they were prepared to make big decisions about the city's infrastructure and future. Scroll forward 10 months and we have a Lib Dem administration, unable or unwilling to do anything except put up taxes and charges. Major decisions about Silver Hill, the millstone around the city's neck, have been kicked into the grass. Important meetings are held in private and general paralysis prevails. And the frustration across the city is growing, as witnessed in the letters page of this paper. It seems the Lib Dems' policy of milking Brexit anger to gain local power was the only card they had to play. Remainers like to pontificate at Winchester's dinner tables that Brexit is an act of collective self-harm. Well, we'll see. However, it's certainly an irony the only tangible evidence of self-harm connected by leaving the EU so far seen is Winchester voting Lib Dem and putting in power an administration without direction and teetering on the edge of incompetence. Martin Halfpenny, Roman Drive, Kings Barton, Winchester.
And Phil Gagg writes a letter headed Sobering. Sir, your columnist, Joanna Lewis, is right to worry about climate change. Her list of everything that is going wrong, Chronicle February 27th, is sobering. The scale of what we need to do is overwhelming. I hope we can all support ways of tackling the problems, however inconvenient. On the same page, however, there are worrying signs that some readers do not share Joanna Lewis's sense of urgency. Motorists, like your correspondent Ingrid Bond, should abandon their view that they are being victimised by attempts to make them pay reasonable charges for the carbon emissions they cause and the parking spaces they occupy. They seem to think that climate change does not happen in the evenings and on Sundays. They must take full responsibility for the global heating, health problems and congestions they are causing. Only once they accept this responsibility will we be able to have constructive discussions about tackling the problems. Similarly, Hugh Lumbee seems oblivious to the need to take radical action and the need to fund major programmes. He mentions an alternative budget for Winchester that offers the same services without new charges. I hope this magical budget will be published before the next election. It really must include proposals for tackling the massive problems Joanna Lewis and I are worried about. If not, we should dismiss it as manipulative hype. Surely in Winchester, we need to follow Warwick District Council's Conservative-led cross-party initiative to raise council tax to fund climate action programmes. I hope that before long our City Council will build on what they have already started and develop a substantial detailed programme for tackling climate change and creating a fantastic zero carbon district. Inevitably it will take a bit of time and a lot of money to get it right, and I believe the Council all share my worry that time is running out. Phil Gagg, St Swithin Street, Winchester.
This letter is from Charles Radcliffe and is post-Brexit. Sir, it is hard to square the Prime Minister's claims that post-Brexit Britain will remain a global force for human rights with the government's refusal to commit to remaining a state party to the European Convention on Human Rights. Mm-hmm. What may seem an esoteric issue goes to the heart of what kind of country we want to be in the wake of our withdrawal from the European Union. Long before the EU was born, it was Winston Churchill who first called for a European Charter of Human Rights, and it was British legal experts who were responsible for drafting large parts of what became the European Convention on Human Rights. The Convention requires that all signatory states, not just EU states, but all those who sign up, to align their domestic laws with international human rights standards. Hard-won advances in Britain and across Europe in a whole range of areas, from gender equality and equal pay for equal work to the elimination of child labour and protection of disability rights and gay rights, can all be traced back to the European Convention. Britain should be proud of the impact it has had on human rights throughout Europe via the Convention. It was British resolve that helped cross-pollinate human rights protections across a vast swathe of territory, home to over 830 million people. By any measure, the Convention has been a resounding success. To retreat from it now would send a signal to the world that Britain is no longer what it was, that we no longer stand for the values of human rights, equality, and non-discrimination. The Brexit debate unveiled some ugly fault lines in British society which do not need to be reopened here. But abandoning the Convention and with it the idea of an international rules-based order should be a step too far for anyone, Leavers and Remainers alike. Britain can be proud of its contribution in the field of human rights in the period since the Second World War. We should be ashamed of the antics of Messrs. Cummings and Johnson as they go about trashing that proud legacy today. And that was from Charles Radcliffe, Woodman Lane, Sparshot.
Out of control, Teresa Skelton writes. I write in connection with a matter very much in the public interest. Many of us hoped that the change of political control in Winchester City Council last spring might herald openness, transparency and responsiveness to public concerns. I myself campaigned for this as candidate for the Justice and Anti-Corruption Party in the local elections at that time. In particular, I raised the issue of the absence of any true regulation of our out-of-control, arrogant, unresponsive police. The JAC party proposed that the local council should establish an effective local liaison system with the police that could help bring the force to heel. Since then, I have repeatedly brought this proposal to the public participation slot at council cabinet meetings. The councillors have conspicuously ignored me whilst I spoke, failed to respond in any way during the meetings, and to a man and woman failed to come back to me at any time afterwards. I find my views recorded in the minutes sketchily and inaccurately, and most recently, discourteously. For last week's meeting of the full council, I submitted the following question. Is this council just going to go on like this over this issue and no doubt others which require any courage to deal with? This was rejected by the chief executive, an unelected official's salary paid by us, the taxpayers, on the ground that it is substantially the same as the question which has been put, in the past 6 months. This is not so. The question does not relate to the substantive issue of council police liaison. It relates to the failure of councillors to respond, and as such it is a new question, and one the councillors clearly don't want to answer. So now the situation would seem to be as follows. You question the council, they fail to respond. You raise that failure, they say you're repeating yourself. So they can go on failing to respond. They've got a rule that says so. So there. Anyone smell a rat about our councillors' democratic credentials? Teresa Skelton, the Justice and Anti-Corruption Party, hide close, hide Winchester.
And that was the last letter to the editor. Thank you very much to all of our contributors. It's time for your say. Children under the age of 12 have been banned from heading a football during training. We asked people what they thought. And Noel's got the answers.
Yes, somewhat predictable answers, I'm afraid. Archie Vernon, 37, retail worker of Edgar Road, St Cross, said, I did it when I was a kid. Since the cases that have caused the health problems, footballs are much lighter. And then Alan Norris, 42, business consultant of Worthy Road. I'm not a footballing person, but balls these days don't do damage as far as I'm concerned. It's just precautionary, I reckon. And then Eileen Walker, 78, retired of Grange Road, Alsford. Health and safety gone mad. You wouldn't be able to do anything sooner or later. And Derek Rainson, 57, labourer of Coldon Common. What next? No tackling in rugby. I'm interested to see how this will impact the future stars of the game.
But going back to the mists of time now for historical news items from our files. And we'll start with 25 years ago, read by Jane.
And 25 years ago was March the 4th, 1995. And there are two items from this paper. Firstly, recycling empty properties could help solve Hampshire's growing housing problems and accommodate its homeless families, according to Hampshire Affordable Housing Forum, HAHF. Over 100 delegates from the county's housing associations, council officers and members, and private landlords met at a conference organised by the Hampshire Council of Community Service on behalf of the HAHF at Winchester Guildhall on Wednesday. Bob Lawrence, chief executive of the Quango Empty Homes Agency, branded the current 845,000 empty homes in Great Britain as an absolute scandal. Wasted assets worth £25 billion lie dormant, he said. And together with the private sector, the Ministry of Defence are the main culprits of owning empty properties, particularly in Hampshire, who waste £330,000 a day of taxpayers' money, he added. Hampshire County Council's senior planning officer, Jane Parker, said there were 25,000 households on the district council's waiting lists and a further 1,500 are either homeless or in temporary accommodation. Last year, the Housing Investment Programme returns estimated that a total of 23,414 properties lay empty in the county, including 2,218 in Winchester, 1,587 in Basingstoke and Deane, and 977 in Eastleigh. This constitutes 4% of the county's total housing stock, but MOD estates in Gosport are four times above the average, followed by the inner city parts of Southampton and Portsmouth, she said. And the second little item is particularly appropriate just at the moment. The soldiers of the Queen are ready, willing and able to go anywhere in the world if only they could get out of their barracks in Winchester. For the prolonged heavy rain of recent weeks has caused a huge lake to form at the main entrance to the St John Moore barracks, and it's proving impossible to pass. And there's a picture of somebody trying to paddle across the road in a canoe. The floodwater measures some 350 metres wide by 100 metres across and is thought to be over a metre deep in places. It's covered the assault course, firing range, and is now flowing across Andover Road. Staff at the barracks, home to the Army Training Regiment, have sought advice from the Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service. I apologise. Now the only solution seems to wait patiently for nature to take its course and hope there's not too much more wet weather on the way.
And we're going to go back 50 years now, so it's over to you, Heather.
March the 7th, 1970. Agriculture in Hampshire is about to take a big step backwards. And despite the industry's progressive nature, nobody's complaining. The big step is in the form of the ancient farm project designed for Butser Hill near Petersfield. It will in fact be a working replica of a farm of the year 30 BC. The farm, which has been given planning approval from Hampshire County Council, will be established on about 57 acres on and around Little Butser, a spur projecting north from Butser Hill itself. Everything will be as primitive as possible, including the sheep and pigs which will be kept, and all unrealistic vegetation will be removed. The Mayor of Winchester is the second piece, sorry. The Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Stanley Spicer, spoke out on Tuesday against the White Paper on Local Government Reorganisation, describing it as a dangerous document which threatened to bring about the death of democracy, and stated, "I, for one, want nothing to do with it." Councillor Spicer was speaking at a special City Council debate on the White Paper. He was not the only one to want nothing to do with it, because the meeting voted against the document and unanimously supported the alternative plan prepared by Winchester City Council and the Borough of Gosport.
Noel's going to take us back 100 years now.
Yes, I have two items from March the 7th, 1920. The first one, a few days prior to February the 20th last, as the cowman was taking the cows to their byre at the top of the grounds at Oakwood, Otterbourne, his attention was turned by a loud noise, and on turning to ascertain the cause, he discovered a deep hole in the pathway caused by the sudden subsidence of the ground. And the other item is, following the resuscitation of the old Winchester Swimming Club, which remained in partial abeyance during the war, came the annual dinner, which for many years formed a popular fixture, the event being held at Dumper's Restaurant on Monday evening.
Finally, we'll go back 200 years, so it's back to Jane.
Which was March the 7th, 1820. Two little items. The first citizens' assembly for this season was held at St John's House in this city on Tuesday evening. An earlier period had been announced, but the occurrence of recent melancholy events operated as a temporary check on the amusement. And secondly, wanted at a school near Winchester a good plain cook who can be well recommended, able to dress three dinners a day, expected to do no work out of the kitchen.
And we're back to the present, because we've got the letter from Westminster, which is going to be read by Heather.
It's by Flick Drummond, who is the Member of Parliament for Meon Valley. The new agricultural bill is now going through Parliament, and I spoke in a debate on it, where I welcomed the legislation, but asked the Minister for more information in several key areas. Now, this bill will in effect replace the EU Common Agricultural Policy with UK rules, where farmers will be rewarded for public good like conserving the environment, protecting soil and rewilding. These issues will do much to make our country greener and contribute to our target of being net zero in greenhouse emissions by 2050. I spoke on areas that really touch on the Meon Valley as a rural constituency and as one that is largely in a national park. The first was the balance between environmental protection and food production. The bill's focus on the environment will help tackle climate change, reduce pollution, and make us a healthier, happier, more sustainable country. However, I told Parliament we need to make sure that all our countryside organisations are working together, because much of Meon Valley is in the South Downs National Park. I also asked for some indication of how the Glover review on the next step for national parks and areas of outstanding natural beauty will impact on the environmental land management schemes for farmers. How targets will be set for farms, both individually and on a national level, for the public goods the government wishes them to produce, was another topic I asked about. I told the Minister that farmers need clarity and an articulated, joined-up agenda that makes it easy for them to plan for the long term. In other Westminster business, I asked about education and skills training for prisoners. Having seen the documentary on prisons, including Winchester, I've been very concerned about it. Around 50% of prisoners in the United Kingdom are functionally illiterate. Now, this means about 43,000 people currently in jail have a reading age of 11 or lower, with many of that number completely illiterate. If reoffending rates are to be cut, having released prisoners with the skills to read has to be a priority. Now, the government is making progress on this, using new prison education contracts to deliver services designed by prison governors and staff to best meet the specific needs of the prisoners and local labour markets. It is now developing a new prison education service to improve the range of training available to prisoners that's directly linked to real jobs on their release. In the constituency, I've been visiting many of our high-tech businesses that export around the world and meeting up with constituents to hear some of their concerns. I am looking forward to attending the Lapis Care event in Wickham on March the 20th. It will be an opportunity for older people and their families to explore some of the choices that may have to be made about future care, whether it is in their own home or elsewhere. I hope people will attend, as planning is crucial rather than waiting for a crisis to happen. And I hope to see you there and at other events in my diary. Flick Drummond, Meon Valley MP.
This week's first person is by Khalid Aziz, and it's read by Noel.
Yes, his headline and the clue is what he's going to write about, Taming the Online Abuse. Action this day. Have I got a deal for you? It works like this. You send me money in multiples of £250, and I rapidly turn it over so that it grows right before your very eyes. You see, I've discovered a surefire winner using Bitcoin. It's all about knowing when to buy and sell, and I have created a computer algorithm that does it all for me. I just take 1% of what you gain on your investment. I've been doing it for a while, and all sorts of people have piled in. But now I want Hampshire Chronicle readers, and you listeners, who may not be that savvy about Bitcoin, to benefit too, because I'm like that. It's so successful, you won't believe who I've already signed up and who have deposited thousands with me. Like Jeremy Clarkson, who you would think would be really cynical about such schemes. So far, he's in for 10,000, and I think he'll do more. Lord Alan Sugar is in too, along with all the dragons from that TV investment programme. I bumped into the outgoing Governor of the Bank of England, Mark Carney, at a drinks do in London the other day, and when I explained it to him, he was blown away. I had to stop him from investing a year's salary, advising him he should start small. So what's stopping you? Jump in! I'll tell you what's stopping you. You're thinking that Khalid has totally lost it now and is surely awaiting the arrival of the men in white coats. I'm clearly no financial guru, and if you think I am, you're as bonkers as I hope you think I am. Yet the above two paragraphs, or something like them, very like them, popped up on my Facebook page the other day, and frankly, enough is enough. I'm fed up with the dissembling of Zuckerberg and similar cronies in other dominant online organisations, hiding behind the mealy-mouthed, we're just a platform, we cannot be responsible for what people post. And this nearly a year after our esteemed former Deputy Prime Minister, one Nicholas Clegg, took Facebook shilling, well, quite a lot of shillings actually, piously proclaiming that his appointment as Global Communications Director, or some such grandiose title, would help bring much-needed higher standards to what people are exposed to online. Of course, I immediately spotted the scam, and I would like to think so would you, but clearly some don't, otherwise they wouldn't be doing it, just as I wouldn't keep getting repeated automated calls to my home landline advising me that my internet is about to be terminated. And I'm on the ICSTIS list that is supposed to stop nuisance phone calls. Clearly, some people fall for these scams. The consumer media is full of sad stories of the gullible who have been fleeced of their life savings. The authorities are playing catch-up on cyber and electronic crime, and they're still way behind the game. And here, and I never thought I'd say this, I claim common cause with Shadow Home Secretary Diane Abbott. She's called for an end to anonymisation on the internet, in her case as a counter to online trolls, the argument being that you are less likely to be so abusive if you have to post under your real name. I would go further. Before you can post anything, you should have to ensure that your IP address is properly registered and verified so people know who and where you are. Ignorance should be no defence, and you should be prosecuted for an unregistered IP address like people who fail to give a breath test when stopped on the suspicion of drink driving. I know totalitarian governments block stuff on political grounds, and that's reprehensible, but good democracies need to protect the vulnerable, and this would be one way of doing it.
Right. OK, so now we've got editorial comment, please, Jane.
Which refers to an article I read earlier, The Irony of the Car Park at the Train Station. The issue of the proposed car park at Shawford Railway Station highlights an ironic clash within the movement to step more lightly on the planet. Rail travel is growing in popularity, and so operators wish to increase the parking capacity at stations. That now means they want to build a 100-plus space car park on, yes, a green field known locally as the Triangle. So, we have a clash between people wanting to protect open space on their doorstep and commuters who are taking a greener option by train travel. Many environmentalists will point out that the root cause of this problem is the massive increase in commuting over the last few decades. They say that the huge increase in the cost of housing in Winchester is relentlessly fuelled by Londoners cashing in on their property and moving down to Winchester, knowing that they can commute every day and be back in the capital every morning within 55 minutes. Poorer people can no longer afford to live in the city, but commute into work. So what is the answer? We don't know, but feel free to write in with suggestions.
For Question and Answer, My Winchester, and it's read by Heather this week.
And it's Erica Dent. She lives in Hamble, but she's the owner of Enjoy Discovering Wine in Winchester. So she tells us what she thinks of the city. What is your favourite restaurant or cafe? The Chesil Rectory for a really nice dinner with an amazing wine list. What is your favourite pub or bar? Oh, the King Alfred on Saxon Road for the delightful atmosphere and good selection of drinks. What's your favourite shop? Project Store and Kitchen, Middlebrook Street. Your favourite building? Winchester Cathedral. What is your favourite view? From the bar at the Royal Winchester Golf Club. Who or what is Winchester's biggest icon? I have to go for Jane Austen. What is Winchester's best kept secret? Open House Deli's turmeric latte. What is the best thing about Winchester? The fantastic range of independent businesses. And the worst? Cost of parking. If there was one thing you could change about Winchester, what would it be? Well, the cost of parking, because I love everything else. Describe Winchester in a sentence. Everyone should visit Winchester to experience the combination of its vibrant, friendly, eclectic, stunning characteristics and people.
And it's time for an alternative look at the news. So over to you, Noel, and read Belgarum Diary.
Yes, I've got two items in Belgarum. Charity Anniversary is the first one. The Winchester branch of the Muscular Dystrophy UK has celebrated its 50th anniversary with a party. Chairman Anne Jones was pleased to welcome the Right Worshipful, the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Eleanor Bell, who addressed the meeting. Other guests were Lisa Wilson, the auditor from Rothmans, and Ashley Venables and Wojciech Trzynski from MDHQ in London. Anne also welcomed Richard Schoen, who had previously been the branch auditor and was instigator of the generous Breust Foundation donations. Janet Hull, for many years the branch chairman, and her husband Jim had flown all the way from Scotland to attend this AGM. Others present were Ronnie and David Davis, known for the Geriactors' murder mysteries, and Chris and Michelle Richmond, all of whom had generously given their time and energies in raising donations for MDUK, Chris by running in the London Marathon. The Winchester branch was formed 50 years ago. Alas, as yet no cure has been found for muscular dystrophy, making this a bittersweet evening, but considerable progress has been made. The branch auditor reported that over the 50 years, the branch had raised £377,553. Some of this sum had been used locally to assist sufferers in this area. MD helped with the purchase of Sam Waddington's wheelchair. Sam, being present, thanked everyone warmly and was keen to emphasise the importance of charity help for such expensive equipment, £16,000. He said that without the chair he would not be able to get on with his life like any other young adult. Anne reported that the committee members were very sad that in 2018 they had lost Alan Richmond, one of the founder members. She invited everyone to browse the display of memories, including the Rupert Bear Flag Days. The party then shared a wonderful Rupert cake made by Vice Chairman Wendy Ling. Anne thanked her committee for its hard work and looked forward to another full year of fundraising, and the committee was re-elected en bloc. Ashley Venables and Wojciech Trzynski filled everyone in with the latest news from head office, and Lisa Wilson gave her auditor's report. And there's a picture of Thelma Finnegan and Janet Hull cutting the lovely designed Rupert cake at the muscular dystrophy party. And the other item, February, a very wet month, as if we hadn't noticed. Forecasters from the Met Office have confirmed that February was the wettest February on record for England and Wales. The UK average was 202.1 millimetres, or nearly 8 inches, surpassing February 1990, which saw 193.4 millimetres, twice the usual amount. But at the Otterbourne measuring station, things were slightly less wet. It recorded 164.6 millimetres, still far above the usual February average. The Weather Service say it has also been the fifth wettest of any calendar month in a series from 1862, behind only October 1903, December 2015, November 2009, and December 1929. A total of three named storms hit during February: Ciara, Dennis, and York.
Now it's time for What's On. I've got four items about concerts for this month. Unfortunately, the first three concerts clash on the same date. So, Saturday, March the 14th, Twyford Singers and Players doing a concert of Handel and Bach at the Hospital of St Cross, St Cross, Winchester, 7:30. Soloists Emily Dickens, Richard Thesiger Pratt and Andrew De Silva. Tickets are £15, £10 and under-16s for the £10, with Jeff Settertree, 01962 712 722, or you can get them from Annie Hibbard, 01962 713 630, or you can get them on the door. Also on Saturday, March 14th, the Kingsgate Voices perform Gabriel Fur's Requiem, plus music by Talis, Bird and J.S. Bach, conducted by Tom Herring, with Andrew Heyman on the organ, at St. Peter's Church, Jury Street, Winchester, SO238RY, at 8 p.m. Proceeds are going to the Winchester Church's Night Shelter. Tickets are £12 from Jan Brook, 01962 714 030, or jan.brook at brookfamily.org. And the other, contrasting concert on Saturday, March 14th, Winchester Symphony Orchestra, under musical director Nicholas Wilkes, at Winchester College New Hall, and the programme includes Haydn and Vaughan Williams. Tickets are £15, or £13 for concessions, or £7.50 for children under 16. You can get them from the telephone box office, 0333 666 3366, and that will cost an extra £1.75 per transaction fee. And on a different date, Sunday, March 22nd, the Romsey Choral Society presents a grand tour of European sacred music, spanning five centuries and 10 countries, including Allegri's Miserere, 7:30 p.m, Hospital of St Cross, Winchester, SO239SD, with new musical director Richard Pearce. Tickets are £15 and reserved, concessions for children and students, on the door, or via www.romseychoral.org.uk. Now, Lighting Up Time ends on Friday the 6th of March at 6:38 a.m. and begins at 5:55 p.m. And on Wednesday the 11th of March, it ends at 6:27 a.m. and begins at 6:03 p.m. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings of the Winchester Talking newspaper and the Winchester Talking magazine, or if you have a problem with the recording that you've received from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. And if there's a problem with your Sovereign or Sapphire player, please try plugging it in and recharging before returning it as faulty. Now, going over to Noel, who has got an announcement about this month's Talking magazine.
Yes, a brief word about the magazine, which you get with this copy of the newspaper. There's an unexpected pause between the announcement at the beginning and then the music, which starts. So all I'm saying is be patient, because the magazine will start. Don't think it's gone wrong. Thank you.
Thank you, Noel. Continue with further items of general news, and we'll start with one read by Jane.
And this is Head Using Experience to Help Charity as Trustee. And the head concerned is Jackie Sumner, and there is a photograph of Jackie. Jackie Sumner has spent almost 30 years teaching in Special Educational Needs and Disabilities, SEND. Having recently retired after 12 years as head teacher in a Hampshire-maintained special school for children with autism, severe, profound and complex special needs and disabilities, she is now bringing her skills to local family support charity Home Start Winchester. I am very happy to have joined Home Start as a trustee for this very worthwhile charity, says Jackie, who lives in Bishop Sutton. Its core values of helping children and families to match my own and having worked with vulnerable children and families throughout my career, I am pleased to be able to continue to use my skills and knowledge through my involvement in any way I can. I am passionate about early intervention work, safeguarding and developing communication and language skills in young children. Early intervention can have really positive impact on future life chances and the development of happy relationships for a child, and those factors seem intrinsic to all who are involved with Home Start, she said. Jackie was a teacher governor in all the schools she worked in over the years and is now an associate governor in an SEND primary school in Southampton. A parish councillor in her village outside Alresford, she has responsibility for highways matters and enjoys working with her colleagues to improve and maintain village life for residents, taking a keen interest in local and national issues. Jackie has lived near Alresford for 23 years and, with her husband and two grown-up children, enjoys tackling DIY and car maintenance projects. She also finds time for gardening, dog walking, cooking, visiting English Heritage and National Trust properties, and off-road driving holidays in the UK and far-flung destinations such as Morocco, and has recently joined the Winchester Rock Choir.
Bishop's call to plant trees in Green Pledge. The Bishop of Winchester has called on Christians from churches across Hampshire and East Dorset to plant trees during Lent and to continue afterwards. The commitment is part of the Diocese of Winchester's Lent campaign to do more to care for God's creation. The Bishop is calling for people across the diocese to plant a variety of trees to contribute to carbon retention and to further the Church of England's ambition to reach net zero carbon emissions by 2030. This year, the Archbishop of Canterbury wants Lent to be a time for Christians to rebuild their relationship with the planet. And the Live Lent campaign is inspired by the Archbishop of Canterbury's 2020 book, Saying Yes to Life, in which theologian Dr. Ruth Valerio explores what it means to be made in God's image and entrusted with the care for God's creation. So Bishop Tim is first asking us all to consider our personal lifestyle choices and how we can better care for the environment in our everyday lives, perhaps by looking at our diet, avoiding single-use plastics, or switching to renewable energy. The Bishop is also calling for churches in the diocese to take on pioneering projects involving the whole congregation and the local community, and hopes that everyone in the diocese will do some tree planting, either in their own garden or through sponsored global projects. This is something all Christians can do, a prophetic action that makes a difference. The Right Reverend Tim Dakin, Bishop of Winchester, said, Lent is a time to reflect on our own lives and our relationship with the gifts God has given us. As Christians, we have a collective responsibility to care for God's creation. We have been given a remarkable world, and protecting it for future generations is an integral part of loving our neighbours and following God faithfully. By planting trees, we would be contributing to a better and healthier world, and I hope many people will join me in working for real change in our environment.
Hampshire man becomes the world's oldest. Britain's oldest man, Bob Wayton, has become the oldest man in the world following the death of the previous holder of the title in Japan. Chitetsu Watanabe is reported to have died at the age of 112 in Japan last month, just days after claiming his Guinness World Record certificate. The position is now held by Mr. Wayton from Alton, who was born in Hull on March 29, 1908. Reacting to the news, Mr. Wayton, a former teacher and engineer who still lives in his own flat, said, "Well, I don't really feel satisfied because it means someone else has died. I just accept it as a fact. It's not something I ever intended, wanted, or worked for. It's just one of those facts of life. You might find it amazing, but it's just one of those things. Mr. Wayton, who turns 112 next month, was formerly England's oldest man, but became Britain's oldest man after Scotland's oldest man, Alfred Smith from Perthshire, who shared the same birthday with him, died last summer. And there's a lovely picture of Mr. Wayton, who looks really quite bright and smiling, holding up his personal number plate for his mobility scooter as he turned 111 years old last March. And it's a big yellow square. It's a number plate, and it's BOB111. In little words underneath, it says, oldest man in England.
And now we have local musicians create unique song for hospice. Musicians have come together to create a new song for Naomi House and Jack's Place, but now the hospice is looking for more people to get involved and raise money. The Sutton Scotney-based hospice teamed up with long-term supporter and musician Ben Lugokeki, along with 30 other artists, to create the charity single music video Forevermore. The video shoot took place at the Railway Inn in Winchester and was filmed and edited by Lauren Metrich from Shortcuts Video. But now the charity is inviting local schools, music groups and community groups to create their very own version. People are asked to learn the song and then create, record and submit their very own version in a music video. There is also the opportunity to raise money for Naomi House and Jack's Place, so the charity is suggesting schools and groups put on performances of their version and charge people to watch. Each video will be entered into a competition, which will be judged by an expert music panel. The winning group will receive a one-off pressed vinyl of the song with the artwork sleeve designed by the children at the hospice, as well as a chance to perform for the charity. Lucy Gray, regional fundraiser for Naomi House and Jack's Place, said, "Forevermore has been written as a track that can be individually interpreted. All lyrics, melodies, scores, harmonies and anything else we think you might need to create your video are provided on our website. We want you and your group to put your creative hats, socks and shoes on and come up with a truly unique version of Forevermore. The more bizarre, the better. There are no limits to this video. Use whatever instruments you'd like, and we would definitely recommend adding in some dance moves to make sure your entry stands out to our expert judging panel. You don't need to be the best singer, dancer or musician. We just want you and your group to have a good time enjoying the power of music and the amazing positive effect it can have on every single person. The winning group and the group who raise the most money will also win a brand new Audient ID4 USB audio interface. The final Audient ID4 winner will be chosen at random from all entries, and the closing date to enter is July the 10th at 5 p.m. For more information on the Forevermore song project and how to get involved, go to naomihouse.org.uk/forevermore. Naomi House and Jack's Place provides respite, emergency, end-of-life and bereavement support to hundreds of children and young adults up to the age of 25 with life-threatening and life-limiting conditions, and offer 24-hour care. And there is a lovely photo of a man and a young woman obviously singing very happily and recording at the same time what I imagine is the song Forevermore in the pub that they were recording it.
Activists highlight flooding danger. A boat in Winchester High Street met Saturday shoppers and drew attention to the increase in extreme weather. Extinction Rebellion Winchester were joined by Extinction Rebellion farmers, calling for action and for the truth to be told. Dagan James from XR Farmers, who farms at Broughton near Stockbridge, said that the role farming can play in mitigating and reducing the impacts of climate and ecological breakdown must be at the centre of future farming policy, not thrown out of the window to get a trade deal with the United States. We can make farming part of the solution. And there's a picture of a whole group of farmers waving a big yellow banner that says XR farmers are sowing the seeds of rebellion. Act now on the climate and ecological emergency. The demonstration was held as the water levels on the River Itchen had dropped several inches in the relatively drier weather. And there's another group of demonstrators holding a big, big notice that just says, well, what's your plan? There remain serious risks of groundwater flooding as the underlying chalk rock is nearly saturated in a similar way as in 2000 and 2014. And the third photograph shows the back of a man wearing a sort of bright blue thing over his normal clothes. And on the back it says, I'm a climate scientist. Ask me questions.
New hospital for this city instead of town. Government funding earmarked for Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust could be used to build a new hospital in Winchester instead of Basingstoke. The government has allocated funding for the trust as part of its health infrastructure plan for hospital building projects, with papers stating the money is for Basingstoke and Winchester. The trust has confirmed that it has been promised a new hospital, but said the funding is for the trust. There's no stipulation on where anything should be built. The Chronicle's sister paper, the Basingstoke Gazette, asked if that could mean the funds are used to build a new hospital for Winchester instead of Basingstoke, but the Trust is yet to respond. Alex Whitfield, chief executive of the Trust, said, there are a number of possibilities under consideration, and at this stage nothing has been ruled out, so we need as many people as possible to tell us what they think is most important as we set off on our journey. A survey launched by the Trust asks the public to state the postcode area in which they live before selecting their top five priorities for improvement when it comes to the modernisation of our hospitals. Options include mental health provision, adequate parking, recreational facilities for staff, environmentally friendly building and modern design features. The Trust has already received a £5 million seed funding to allow it to proceed to the next stage of developing their hospital plans. Further funds are not due to be given until between 2025 and 2030. Basingstoke MP Miriam Miller is calling for the funds to be used to build a new hospital at a location near Junction 7 of the M3, rather than used to patch up existing buildings, which she believes the Trust is currently doing. She said, it is difficult to understand why local hospital managers are considering using this once-in-a-generation opportunity to patch up the existing 1970s buildings rather than give the people of Basingstoke a brand new hospital building. Anyone who has used the Basingstoke and North Hampshire Hospital or visited relatives in the past few years knows how the staff are struggling to work in a building that is nearing the end of its useful life. We need a new hospital that is built to serve Basingstoke as it is today and how it is planned to grow in future years, not as it was in 1970. The site at the M3 was previously identified as the ideal location for a new critical treatment hospital. However, Hampshire Hospitals Foundation Trust's plans to build the £150 million hospital had to be scrapped in 2017 because it was deemed not affordable by the local clinical commissioning groups, which pay trusts to provide health service.
And here we have popular former city mayor dies aged 83. A long-serving local politician, Sue Nelms, has died aged 83. Sue was mayor of Winchester 2006 to 2007 and a city councillor for St Bartholomew Ward from 1998 to 2015. Sue was a well-known figure in Winchester, having been a ward councillor for so long. She was very easy for her residents to contact as she held court outside Tom's Deli in St George's Street. After an early career in the City of London as an actuary and then in merchant banking, she moved to Winchester to work in Hampshire County Council and then Winchester City Council. Sue, of Bar End Road, was an active member of the Chesil Theatre with her husband Ron. They had a shared love of theatre, of music, good wine and of travelling the world. They had a memorable 1 year round the world trip when they both retired. She had strong social conscience, was a volunteer for the Samaritans, a union representative, and a committee member for the Trades Union Congress. That wish to help people was what led her to local politics once she had retired. She was also heavily involved in the Hyde Abbey Garden Project and a member of Inner Wheel. Sue passed away peacefully in her sleep on February the 15th and would be greatly missed by her daughter Sarah, granddaughter Laura, and many friends and colleagues in the organisations she worked with and the many residents she helped over the years. There will be a funeral and celebration of her life, a good life, well held on Thursday, March the 12th at 2 p.m. at Chesil House, Bridge Street, by the river that she loved. Ever practical rather than flowers, she wished for a donation in her memory to a cause close to her heart, the Samaritans. And there is actually another small article about Sue Nelms which mentions that a minute of silence was dedicated to two prominent members of the Winchester community at a city council meeting. Those at the Guildhall last Wednesday evening bowed their heads in respect of the former mayor, Sue Nelms, and businessman Keith McCartney, who was killed in Storm Ciara after a tree fell on his car. Tragic. But there is also a very joyous photograph, a large photograph of Sue Nelms on her 70th birthday, cutting into a 70 birthday cake with a large crowd of other 70-year-olds standing behind her. And it's rather interesting to see how varied they look in their ages. And actually, particularly interesting that I was given this to read today, purely by chance, because it happens to be my 70th birthday. Thank you.
Tax goes up as plans adopted. The Liberal Democrats' financial plans for 2020 to 2021 have been adopted following long debate at a full Winchester City Council meeting. Council tax will be put up 3%. Sunday charges will be added to most city centre car parks, and an enhanced garden waste service will be introduced. These are the three main aspects that Conservative councillors raised questions about on Wednesday evening. Councillor Caroline Horrell described the tax increase as a Robin Hood story. With a total of £4.5 million extra in this budget that you were not expecting, why are you taking more from the decent residents of Winchester when you don't need to? She asked. But Councillor Martin Todd of the Liberal Democrats said the Conservatives, who were in power from 2011 to 2019, had been financially irresponsible for years and avoided making hard decisions such as raising taxes. He said, we need to be realistic and we need to be prudent on how we think about finances. Our tax increase is the third lowest in Hampshire. Conservative councils all over are increasing their taxes. And although it is a regret that we are not the lowest in the county, we should take pride that the Lib Dem councils are among the lowest. At car parks in the air quality management area, which excludes Chesil Street multi-storey and the cattle market, a flat rate charge of £2 will be introduced on Sundays, and the weekday charging period will be extended to 7 o'clock p.m. This council is not supporting its rural residents by implementing this, said Central Meon Valley Ward Councillor Victoria Weston. Well, the parking charge increases will be going towards helpful things, responded Councillor Brian Laming. The parking wardens will pay for themselves, and some money will go towards an increase in bus services. There are only 3 buses a day in my area, and some have even less. The enhanced garden waste service will give residents the option to buy a plastic bin that will be collected on a rotor, rather than using the current bag system, which is paid for by council tax. Following accusations of the pay-to-scheme being unfair, Councillor Martin Todd said, let's not pretend like the current service is free. It's not free to the council taxpayer.
Sue Award shortlisted for Sharing MS Story. A Kingsworthy woman who shared her story to help others is struggling with multiple sclerosis, MS, has been nominated for an award. Sue Collis appeared in Overcoming MS's OMS video, which has now been shortlisted in the 2020 Charity Film Awards. The charity's film, called Imagine Overcoming MS, features seven real people from around Britain who live with MS. Each person tells the story of their diagnosis, symptoms, and the hope they found through OMS, and the film aims to raise awareness about the work of the charity to reach more people diagnosed with the condition. Sue was diagnosed with MS in 1989 after she became incredibly fatigued and looked like a ghost, walking very slowly around the house. Basic things like tying shoelaces, writing or using her right hand became impossible. After living for over two decades with extreme tiredness and fears of falling, she discovered OMS, a lifestyle program that includes a plant-based diet, regular exercise, vitamin D and stress reduction techniques, and now as an OMS ambassador and living a normal life, she is featured in a new campaign. She said, "I enjoyed sharing my story and being part of the video, and I'm so pleased it has been helping others with MS by offering real hope. It was viewed by over 10,000 people in the first week." Speaking about her battle, Sue said, "I know I'm still improving every day, but it's not all perfect. Debilitating fatigue followed a normal infection last summer, but now I feel so well again. In common with those I know who follow OMS, my general health is excellent. The relentless fear finally left me last year. I no longer feel restless, chaotic and helpless, but capable and optimistic." Films are judged by a panel of experts, which includes high-profile names from entertainment, business, politics and media. Celebrity ambassadors for Charity Film Awards include Mariella Frostrop, Quentin Wilson, Jason Bell and Chris Warburton. Winners will be announced at a gala ceremony in central London in spring. Simon Burton, co-founder of the Charity Film Awards, said, "In the digital age, charities' use of video is fundamental to engage the hearts and minds of their communities. Overcoming MS's Imagine film is a great example of that in action." OMS is now urging supporters to take part in the second public vote to help the charity become a finalist and category winner. People can watch the video and vote here, https://charityfilmawards.com/videos. Imagine overcoming multiple sclerosis.
And now, proposal for music event near South Wanston. An organiser looking to put on a music festival near Winchester is asking local residents to give him a chance. Suni Phoenix, along with two of his friends, is seeking Winchester City Council's permission to host a two-day event at Worthy Grove, a large green space just outside South Wanston. If approved, the licence will allow live music and the consumption of alcohol on site from 11 a.m. on July the 10th to 2 a.m. the following morning and from 11 a.m. until 3 a.m. the following day. The festival, called Hidden Wonderland, has a maximum capacity of 4,999 and revellers have the option to camp. Mr. Phoenix, who lives in Wigan, told the Chronicle, "Opinions of local people are divided. We have done our absolute best to speak with all the surrounding villages and some of the support has been overwhelming. What we want people to realise is that this is not Boomtown. We've gone to huge extents to deal with the noise. We are nowhere near the village. We are on a tiny site and our sound systems will ensure nearby people won't hear anything. The impact on traffic will be absolutely minimal too. We've thought it all through. It's only 2 days and a lot of people have said they're excited and not much else goes on in the area. It's never going to be some massive festival. We really hope people can give us a chance to be who we say we are." Nearby residents have been offered free tickets to the event, which will feature five separate stages and see genres such as techno, house and hip-hop. A number of live bands have also been booked. Areas dedicated to yoga, meditation and mental health workshops are planned as well. Mr. Phoenix will be at the public meeting in South Wanston on Friday, March the 13th, to speak with locals. He added, "It's hard to convey things over the phone, so all three of us will be there. We are absolutely dying to meet people and encourage as many people as possible to turn up. We're not trying to be difficult, and people's concerns will not fall on deaf ears. And the Chronicle has contacted South Wanston Parish Council and is awaiting a response. There is a photograph of the map of the proposed area, Worthy Down, Christmas Hill and South Wanston, which is extremely close to where we're actually recording at this moment.
Rail strikes called off for more talks. Hampshire rail users will no longer face travel misery as a union has called off planned strikes for this month. Southwestern Railway had confirmed two further dates for strike action in an ongoing battle over the role of guards on trains. Members of the Rail, Maritime and Transport Union were due to walk out between 10 o'clock in the morning on March the 9th and 10 o'clock on March the 10th, and again between 10 a.m. on March the 12th and 9:59 on March the 13th. But union members announced on Tuesday that the planned action will no longer go ahead and has called off the strikes in good faith to allow further talks to take place this Friday. A Southwestern Railway spokesman said, "Well, we are pleased for our customers and colleagues that next week's strikes have been suspended. We hope that we can now find a solution to bring a permanent end to this dispute for everyone's sake. We are now working hard to reinstate the full timetable for next week." It would have been the sixth time the Southwestern Railway staff have voted for industrial action in the past 2.5 years. As Southwestern Railway plans to introduce new trains that allow drivers to operate the doors instead of guards. There is a photograph of RMT members protesting. There's a big banner saying, "Keep the guards, Southwestern Railways." The strike is all about safety, and they're holding placards saying, "Keep the guards" on Southwestern Railway. They feel that trains without guards are far less safe for passengers.
Joy as ribbon cut on new space. The Mayor of Winchester opened Coldham Common Preschool's brand new garden studio. Bought through fundraising and grants, this private and secure outdoor space will be where the preschool carry out their language and communication focus groups with the children. It will also be where they hold our parent one-to-ones and meetings with professionals such as inclusion coordinators and complete any administrative duties. Members of the community, including representatives from the funding organisations, along with families who attend the preschool, came along to join in the festivities. After Mayor Councillor Eleanor Bell cut the ribbon and declared the studio open, attendees enjoyed tea and cake at the community centre on St Vigor Way. Richard Izard, chairman of the preschool, said, "We are delighted with our Hampton studio. We can't wait to get in and start using it. With funding for preschools becoming more and more difficult, we're particularly grateful to the Parish Hall Trust and the Parish Council for providing grants that will enable us to provide that little bit extra." Jackie Hadley, supervisor, said, "It's wonderful to have a professional space to conduct our business administration. We are looking forward to our parent one-to-ones that can now take place in March in a confidential space." And there's a big picture of the opening and a very nice looking preschool studio that actually looks a little bit like a very modern garden shed.
Now, potholes continue to plague village roads. A villager has attacked the county council for the poor state of local roads. Andrew Meadowcroft has sent in 6 photos of potholes on roads in Kingsworthy around the junction of Nations Hill and Springvale Road. Mr Meadowcroft of Felmer Drive, Kingsworthy, said some potholes were 3 to 4 inches deep and included holes around manhole covers. "It is an absolute disgraceful state and dangerous. The top of Nations Hill at the junction with Campion Way is little better. Indeed, Springvale Road, from the Foresters Park Industrial Units, Wellhouse Lane, to the bottom of Nations Hill, is so full of damaged or partially repaired potholes, even at the junction with Andover Road, that drivers have to frequently try to swerve to avoid them. It is astonishing that any responsible local authority could allow the various roads to have deteriorated to this extent. Hyde Street in Winchester is also a mess. Many other roads are nearly as bad. Can anyone please tell me what is going to be done about this and when? The Chronicle contacted Hampshire County Council for a comment, but it has yet to respond. And this is accompanied by photographs of roads in the most appalling condition, with huge holes. If one was attempting to cycle down these roads, it would be lethal.
That concludes the extracts for the week ending 6th of March 2020. Thank you to our editors, Sonia Phillips, Jane Pickard, Sheila Shepherd and Sheila Shepard. Thank you to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And, of course, thanks to our readers, Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening. Goodbye for now, and I hope you have an enjoyable week ahead. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet, and please place the correct address label on the front of the wallet too, and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you, and goodbye again.